Hello and welcome back to TL Talks Podcast. I am TL. It's good to have you. Thanks for joining me. This week, we have a pretty awesome lineup as far as talking points. Starting off with, as usual, the TL Thought of the Day. So this week's Thought of the Day has to do with potential. So when I say potential, often I'll think about myself and I'll think about, you know, where I'm at in life, what natural talents I have or don't have, and more importantly, what I've done with those talents that I do have, right? So what I'm saying is, if you've ever thought about what you would look like at your full potential, maybe some of you haven't, but if you have, or let's say if you haven't, I invite you to do it right now. I want you to maybe close your eyes, but envision yourself and all the different ways that a person can be, you know, whether it be intellectually, spiritually, physically, emotionally, all those different ways, right? All the things that make up a person. Think about what you would look like and act like and be like if your full potential was met. So for myself, I can't speak for anybody else, but when I speak for myself, I would say that if I reach my full potential, you know, I'm envisioning how I'd probably look, how smart I would be. I definitely would have read more books, spiritually where I'd be at, emotionally where I'd be at. Like for me, I'm not going to go into too much detail, but, you know, emotionally, like a good example would be, I should be probably seeing a therapist right now just to sort through some stuff that only a professional can really help you with. But I'm not currently. And that's not because I don't like therapists or I'm avoiding it necessarily. It's just one of those things that's really easy to put off. So I just need to make it a priority, basically. But that could be better, right? Then you look at yourself physically. Right. So we look the way we look right now, and the way we look right now has several different factors to it. It could be your genetics. It could be how you eat, what you drink. You know, all those things add up to kind of how you look. How I look. I didn't think about this beforehand. If I were to put it on a scale of how I look compared to how I could look. Now, granted, I'm not a very metrosexual person, so I don't want to get carried away here. But based on my potential compared to where I actually do look currently, I'd say on a scale from 1 to 10, I'm probably maybe a 6 or 7-ish. So if I were to max out my potential, I don't know what I'd be. Probably an 8, or depending on the woman's taste, maybe a 9. I don't think I'd ever be a 10, because I don't think most humans are 10s. You know, I don't have the same bone structure as Brad Pitt and stuff like that, but I'm also okay with that. I don't think you need to be a 10. So, probably be an 8 or 9, depending on who you ask, if I reach my full potential. But I've been a 6 or 7, not only currently, but for a long time now. And that's not a 6 or 7 compared to other people, maybe. Depends on who you ask. But it is a 6 or 7 on my scale. It's a 6 or 7 based on what I could be as opposed to what I am. So room for improvement, right? And then, we talked about intellectually, physically, and emotionally. Yeah, so intellectually, as I've gotten older, I've grown a love of learning. And so I've gotten into podcasts like Joe Rogan's, for example. And learned a lot of cool stuff. I was telling my buddy tonight, I was like, you know, I asked him if he read a lot, you know, because I've been trying to read more, but it's always been a struggle for me. And he's like, yeah, I read some, but it's a struggle for me. He said the same thing happens to him that happens to me. He'll be reading a book, then he'll get distracted, then he'll not even realize what he just read. Then he'll have to go back and read the same thing again to make sure that he got it. And that can be exasperating. So, same thing for me, which is why I haven't been a reader in the past, but I do have a desire to be a reader because I know that a lot of very smart people read a lot, there's a lot of wisdom to be had from books. And so I'm not sure what the answer is. I'm not sure if it's just a matter of pushing through that, pushing through your not being comfortable and just doing it. And it's just practice makes perfect. Or another possibility is like audiobooks, maybe, you know, like books that you listen to instead of read. That might be the answer too. So I just need to, you know, make it a priority and figure it out. But yeah, so that'd be my three examples: physically, intellectually, and emotionally, things that I could do to better myself. And so I'm at where I'm at right now. I don't feel like I've even scraped the surface of my potential as a person in my life, which is frustrating. But you can't do shit about yesterday, right? So you just try to do the best for today, best for tomorrow, and, you know, just try to bridge the gap, basically. You know where your potential's at, you know where you're currently at, and if you keep it real with yourself, you can see where you're at in the meantime. So just trying to reach your full potential. And so I just encourage all my listeners to take an honest look at themselves, you know, from a physically, emotionally, intellectually, and spiritually standpoint, and see where you're at and where you could be. And if you're far from your potential, then that should be enough motivation for you to take action. If you're kind of close to it, I can see how complacency can set in. But if you're a perfectionist like me, that might be enough too to take action. So knowing's half the battle. That's my thought of the day. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Moving on to football. So first up is the Cleveland Browns, my beloved team. Cleveland Browns played the Bengals on Sunday. Final score was 27-19 Browns. It was a win, so of course I'll take it. It was at home, but it was an ugly win. And so that's why it didn't feel great. I mean, the Bengals aren't very good, but yeah, it was just an ugly win. I mean, we won the game, which is what we're supposed to do, but I think, you know, after these games like this, there's not very much excitement or happiness from Browns fans or, you know, players being interviewed. And I think the reason for that is because, you know, speaking of potential, I think the team knows what they could be and what their potential is, and it's through the roof, and they're just not reaching it. You know what I mean? They're not reaching their full potential. They're not blowing teams out that they can blow out. They're kind of just playing these close games with everybody, and they know that they can do better. And so, you know, it's unlikely we're going to make the playoffs this year, which is a bummer. But you just take it one game at a time. Speaking of one game at a time, our next game is against the Cardinals. It's at Cardinals, and so it'll be a away game. I picked the Browns to win that game, but I think it's going to be a very close game. I think the Browns, if they do win, which hopefully they do, probably be, you know, somewhere between 3 and 7 points as a difference. But I think it'll be a pretty good game. We're pretty evenly matched, even though they have 3 wins and we have 6 wins. You know, they have Kyler Murray, who's very mobile, can make plays, a couple of solid receivers, and a decent defense. Well, their pass defense sucks, but besides that, their defense is okay. But the Browns have underachieved this year, so that's why I think it's going to be kind of even. But I do think the Browns are a better team. It being at their place is going to help them a little bit. That's why I think it'll be close. But I still do give the Browns the edge. And so hopefully I'm right. We'll see on Sunday. Moving on to Ohio State. Ohio State Buckeyes. So last weekend, I think I mentioned to you guys, I flew to Las Vegas to attend a female football game, which is pretty awesome. I enjoyed that. Got to meet some new people, and it was a good game. Final score was 28-20. But during that trip, I plan on going to watch 3 different games. I was going to watch the female game, then leave early for that game and watch a men's game, Team Colorado. And then later on that night, the Colorado Greyhawks were going to play at 7 p.m. Well, shit didn't work out that way. When I got to the game, I, you know, said hi to a couple people, including the owner of the Utah Falcons, Sam, and she asked me if I could work the chains. So, you know, like the first down markers and stuff. So, of course, I said yes. And so I did the chains for the game. So that meant that I couldn't leave the game early. So since I couldn't leave the game early, that made it unlikely for me to go see the Team Colorado game. Then I was going to meet up with this O-line coach from San Diego at the host hotel afterwards. just to kind of pick his brain. That's, to be honest with you, that's pretty much the reason I made the trip, because it was only a 24-hour trip. I made the trip because I wanted to basically become a better coach and a better OC. And one of the things that I need to learn the most about is offensive line stuff. So his name is Mark Ring. Shout out to Mark Ring. He's a really good guy, a really good offensive line coach. And so I was able to pick his brain for a little bit at the bar at the host hotel. And so that in itself made it worth it. Well, during that meetup with Mark Ring, I placed a bet on Ohio State. I think the spread was 16 points versus Wisconsin in the Big Ten Championship. I'm like, yeah, they should cover that. And they killed him last time. Well, last time, I don't think they had their star running back. He either got hurt during the game or he didn't play at all or something. That's a huge difference. He's a really good running back. So I placed the bet for like $400 on the Buckeyes, 16-point spread, and they won by 13. So, of course, I'm going to take the win. I'm glad Ohio State won, stayed perfect, and they're now in the college playoff. But it kind of sucked that they didn't cover the spread, especially because at the end they had a chance to score one more time, which would have covered the spread, and it just didn't happen. But that's what I get for, you know, betting on that big of a spread with their star running back. It wasn't the wisest move. But, yeah, Ohio State beat Wisconsin in the Big Ten Championship 34-21. So they finished the regular season undefeated. They are officially in the college playoff, which has four teams, and we're seeded number two. So that's not great for us because the seedings go LSU 1, Ohio State 2, Clemson 3, Oklahoma 4. So that means that we have to play Clemson in the first round. Then if we win that game, we'd play the winner of LSU and Oklahoma. In my opinion, if there's any team that can beat Ohio State, it's Clemson. And so it kind of sucks that we're going to play them first. But, you know, if you're going to win the championship, you got to play them eventually anyways. So tomato, tomato. But it's going to be a great game. I'm looking forward to it. I want to say it's on the 28th, but it's going to be awesome. I'm actually going to be driving back to Ohio for Christmas with my dog. And so I might come back early to join my buddy in watching the game here locally if I'm not traveling. But that's TBD. I'd prefer to watch it somewhere. You know, I don't want to be driving during the game. But we'll see how that goes. Yeah, so they're going to play Clemson. Hopefully we win. Then we play the winner of LSU-Oklahoma. The most, like, storybook ending to the season would be Ohio State versus LSU because Joe Burrow used to play for Ohio State. He transferred to LSU, and he is having a Heisman year for them. He's phenomenal. And so I'm sure he would love to stick it to Ohio State in the national championship as icing on the cake. But he's still got to beat Oklahoma first, and more importantly, he's got to beat Ohio State if he plays us, which is easier said than done. So we'll see. I'm looking forward to all of it, though. The playoff is awesome. Last thing before I get into my interview is fantasy football. If you play fantasy football, you should be in the playoffs right now, probably the second round. I want to say the semifinals for most leagues. And so this is a list of players that you can get in free agency if you're looking to – you know, replace a guy that's injured. There's no more bye weeks, but yeah, basically if you're kind of weak at a certain position or you have a guy who's injured, these are guys you could pick up and plug in if you need to. And they are as follows. At quarterback, you have Trubisky, Brissett, Drew Lock for the Broncos. I don't like him. He seems like a punk, but he's has good stats so far. Phillip Rivers, Tannehill, Derek Carr, and Eli Manning. I'm not sure if Danny Dimes is going to be back for the Giants. So obviously if he's back, then no sense of getting Eli. But Eli did have a pretty solid game, especially in those bad weather conditions against the Eagles. So props to him for that. The only running back I have on my list is Hill from Atlanta. The reason he would be a good play is only if Freeman doesn't play. They kind of split carries when he plays, but if Freeman doesn't play, then Hill would be the main back, which could be a really solid play. The receivers, there's these are all under the radar guys. There's Sims, a guy named Ford from Miami, Marcus Johnson, I think, for the Colts, Pascal, A.J. Brown, and Slayton for the Giants. The two tight ends are Ian Thomas and Higbee. Both those guys are pretty good plays. Ian Thomas is a tight end for Carolina, and Greg Olsen just got a pretty bad concussion, so he should be the main tight end for the next game. And Higbee, I believe he plays for the Rams, and I think Gerald Everett has been out for the Rams. And so as long as Everett's out, Higbee's a good play too. The two IDPs, which stands for individual defensive player, you could pick up if you're looking for one, is Cunningham from the Texans and Baker from the Cardinals. Buda Baker, Cunningham's had a monster year. He should be in the Pro Bowl. I mean, he has a shitload of tackles this year. So copy and paste with him. Same thing with Baker, to be honest with you. Baker's had a really good year too. I think he's a safety for the Cardinals, but he just gets tons of tackles, and he's a playmaker. So guys you can pick up for individual defensive players. So that's what I have for fantasy. Last thing before we get into my interview would be, I was talking to a friend, and I think it was somebody who listens to my podcast, and we were talking about how the podcast has went so far and how they usually enjoy most of the guests. And I was talking about the format of it, where I do the thought of the day, and then we talk about football and Browns, Ohio State, fantasy, and then the guest, which is all great. I feel like it goes pretty smoothly. Got a nice little rhythm going down. But obviously, the football season is going to end soon, especially fantasy football. It's going to be over after week 17. So she asked me, what are you going to do when there is no fantasy football? Because obviously you're not going to do a fantasy thing if there is no fantasy. And I'm like, oh, that's a good point. I didn't think about that. So, if you think about it, there's a thought of the day, Browns, Ohio State, and fantasy, and then my guest. Thought of the day doesn't have to change. Browns are eventually going to stop playing, probably when the regular season is over. Ohio State's going to stop playing after their, however far they go in the playoffs. And fantasy football is going to end soon. So that's going to be a lot of time that I was spending talking about football that won't be there. So I think my two initial ideas for filling that time would be talking about my team that I'm coaching, Denver Bandits. I'm just giving you guys an update on them so you can kind of take that journey with me as far as practice and preparation and, anticipating the new season. But then also, I have another idea where, my thought of the day is usually something pretty serious, like some introspective stuff about how you can better yourself or kind of change your perspective on certain things in life, which is serious. But I was thinking that maybe I can do a second half or a second thing, which isn't the thought of the day, which is more of just a random rant, which would kind of lean towards comedy. Because I have some things I can definitely rant on, and you guys might find them hilarious. So, TBD, we'll see. We'll stay tuned for that, but we'll see. We'll see what happens. But yeah, we still have a couple weeks left with football, so no reason to overthink that. But without further ado, my guest this week was Elizabeth Jenkins. She is formerly Elizabeth Dillo. She is currently the COO of the WNFC, which is a league that I'm in, or my team's in. And so, she's an awesome person, awesome mom, awesome football player. I mean, she's just awesome all the way around, just like OJ. So she is, you guys might remember OJ Jenkins. She was a guest on a previous podcast, and she is OJ's wife. And so OJ's the CEO of the WNFC, and Elizabeth is the COO of the WNFC. So they're quite the power couple. But awesome interview. I got to learn some stuff about her. I'm sure you guys will enjoy it. But the interview was about an hour long, so that went according to plan, and it was super enjoyable. So without further ado, here is my interview with Elizabeth Jenkins, formerly Elizabeth Dillo.
I'd like to welcome formerly Elizabeth Dillo, currently Elizabeth Jenkins, to the TL Talks podcast. I know you're a busy woman, Elizabeth, so first of all, thank you for joining me.
Yeah, for sure. My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Terry.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So the way I start all my interviews off is by explaining to my listeners kind of how we know each other. So I started coaching women's football about 6 years ago, and ever since I got involved, I pretty much became a nerd of the sport, and I made it a point to attend all the WFA championships when I was a part of the WFA. So I think that's how we met each other originally. You used to play for our hometown of Cleveland, Cleveland Fusion, for years, and I think I met you a couple of those championship weekends, and then obviously as time progressed, you planned on retiring from football.
But ask me how that's going.
Yeah, that didn't work out. So, so you ended up relocating to Texas, and you married O.J. Jenkins, and so that's what the name changed. So congrats on that.
Thank you.
And now you are an integral part of why this new league, the WNFC, is a well-oiled machine and taking over the world. And so that's my words, not yours. But, that's how we know each other. So the first question I have for you, Elizabeth, is one of the cool things about these interviews is I get to, I know you, but I don't know, obviously, all about your life. And so one of the things that we start with is kind of your background. And so let's just start with your background as far as, where you were raised, who raised you, kind of where you went to school, what your sports background is, what your non-sports background is as far as, where you've worked or where you currently work, and then, kind of your accolades. I know you're a humble person, but I know you're a very well-accomplished football player yourself, and so...
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah, so... Details you give us.
I born and raised in Ohio, and until about I say Cleveland because that's what people normally know when they think of, Northeast Ohio.
Right.
But I grew up in Geauga County, which is about 40 minutes from downtown Cleveland. Mm-hmm. And I grew up out in the middle of nowhere. We had a small farm. I live with my parents, my mom and my dad, and I have two siblings, an older brother and a younger sister. Mm-hmm. And we had a little farm out there and had a couple horses and cows and pigs, not anything big, but we did have a little farm that kept us extremely busy. Mm-hmm. And I went to high school at a very small high school called Berkshire High School in Burton, Ohio. Graduated with a class of 99, and I played fast pitch softball the majority of my high school career, except for my senior year. I was cut from the team, and...
Interesting.
Yeah, I know. I was devastated, but, being that it is such a small school and small roster, is one of the superstars of the track team her entire high school career decided her senior year that she wasn't getting along real well with the track coach. So she decided to leave track and come and play softball. Mm-hmm. And she was a pretty stellar athlete. And apparently I was the lowest on the totem pole as far as, I was a pretty consistent first baseman and I was a decent, cleanup hitter. Mm-hmm. But aside from, being very versatile, I really wasn't. And then I decided that I wasn't just going to sit around and do anything, that I wanted to stay in sports. So I went and talked to the track coach and asked her if I could join, even though it was a little bit late, and she allowed me to. And I just did, shot and disc and was the captain of the throwing team, despite being my first year in track and starting late. I had the opportunity to do that, so that was pretty cool. And and then from there, I went right into the working world. I did not go to college. Well, I lied. My mom kind of made me go to college, but I really, 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 really didn't want to. I've never been a fan of school. I always struggled, and not struggled with grades. I just struggled with it keeping my attention. I was kind of ready to get at it, and make my mark in the world, whatever that was going to be. Mm-hmm. So I started working doing some smaller jobs, you know, landscaping and waitressing and bartending and stuff like that until I got my first kind of real job. And I think I was 19, and that was at Allstate Insurance. And I spent a couple years there, and that introduced me to the corporate world. And then from there, I transitioned to Charter One Bank, worked there for years and years and years as a branch manager, and then found myself in my current role where I'm at Charles Schwab.
Nice.
So, yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So you played softball in high school, and then you transitioned to track. How did you happen upon football? How'd that start?
So I have always played football growing up. You know, living out in the country, we didn't have, well, there wasn't anything to do. So we always had to make up whatever we wanted to do, and backyard football was very much one of those things. So a lot of the neighborhood kids would come over. We had a massive front yard, and we would play full-on football games, you know. And we even did the whole, we set up our own Monday night football games where we would go out and set up lights along the tree line. And, yeah, I know, it was pretty intense. So I've always had a passion for the game. My family, my dad and my mom were huge Browns fans, right? So we grew up watching the Browns, and, you know, we always ended up playing football in the front yard instead of watching the Browns games. But yeah, so that's how I started with football.
Okay. So when, at what age did you start playing football?
Oh God, a long time ago. You made me do the math. I think I was 22.
Okay.
Yeah. I think I was 22 because I had my son when I was 23 and I had gotten pregnant with him my very first year playing. Mm-hmm.
All those years with the Fusion?
There was a year and a half in between there that I played with the Pittsburgh Passion. I went over and I got a chance to play with, yeah. See, you didn't do all your fact checking.
Yeah, no, yeah. There's a lot of stuff
in there. Yeah, no, I got a chance to go over there and play, and that's where, now the Griswold twins I had played with throughout the course of their careers being from Toledo as well.
Yeah.
But I got a chance to really play with, OG when I went to Pittsburgh and Lisa Horton and, you know, all of them. That's the motto. I don't know if you know some of the older crew from, it was kind of, I think that 2006, 2007? Years. So I played there for like a year, year and a half, and then I went back to the Fusion.
Gotcha. You play for the Fusion for how long?
Ever. Subtract all the other years besides a couple years I've been in Texas. I was with the Fusion the whole time. Yeah, I started my career with them, did a little stint in Pittsburgh, went back to Fusion, and I was with the Fusion through the 2017 season.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yep.
So my first, this is a random question. I didn't have this plan, but I'm interested to see what your answer would be. So I am not only a Browns fan, I'm somewhat of a hardcore Browns fan. Like, okay. I, you know, have a Browns tattoo on my shoulder. You know, watch every game. I know all the players. I'm completely locked into the team. So I'm as hardcore as it gets, to the point where I hate Pittsburgh so much that I've told people things like, if the Steelers were to call me tomorrow and say, hey, Terry, I know it's kind of random, but, you know, we heard about you having some coaching success in Colorado, and we want to offer you a coaching contract for the Steelers, and we're going to pay you, you know, some kind of obscene amount of money, right? Which is obviously would never happen, but this is hypothetical.
Sure.
If the Steelers called me and offered me millions of dollars to coach the Steelers, I would not only say no, but I'd probably say a curse word with them.
You're crazy.
Yeah, I know.
You're crazy.
When I tell people that, they don't really believe me. You know what I mean? They're like, oh, yeah, it's easy to say that when they're not calling you, right? But yeah. I really mean that. Like, I loathe them so much that I couldn't even, like, I wouldn't be able to put on their colors. You know what I mean? Like, it's that deep of a hatred for me. So what do you think of that? Do you think that's ridiculous, or do you think you respect the loyalty, or where you at?
I think I absolutely understand that level of hardcore when it comes to your team. I get it. I totally get it. I did struggle putting on Pittsburgh colors when I went there and transitioning everything to those colors. But ironically, the flag team that I was playing on in the Cleveland area at the same time were the same colors, and I struggled with those too, you know. But I think it's something I just eventually got over. And then, you know, as my son grew up and continued to grow into football, he would always joke that he was going to go play for the Steelers when he got older. And, you know, it would, like, infuriate me. Like, infuriate me. Like, what are you talking about? You're not going to go play for the Steelers. But, you know, I just, that's changed a little bit now. That's changed a little bit for me. I have a different perspective on things.
Gotcha. Okay.
And I really enjoyed my time in Pittsburgh. You know, amazing organization, amazing women. And I think that's the cool part, you know, is the relationships and the bonds that you form. You don't forget those. You know, they stick with you for a lifetime.
Yeah, for sure. I definitely have a ton of respect for the Pittsburgh Passion, you know, as a team, as an organization. Since I've gotten involved with women's football, they've been, you know, consistently a top team throughout the time that I've been involved. And so, you know, meeting like Coach T, you know, and Lisa Horton, players like that, I think it's hilarious that Lisa Horton's like one of their most famed players of their history, and she's a Browns fan. And so that
makes she's from Cleveland.
Yeah, that makes me smile inside. But,
I know.
Yeah. But, so I definitely have
a... You know Horton played a year in Cleveland, right?
Did she?
Yeah.
I did not
sure did.
Yeah, I have her on my list of prospective guests. Hopefully she takes me up on it. But she's awesome.
Yeah,
I love her,
sure.
You know, on and off the field for sure. My first plan question for you is about our boy Myles Garrett.
So, yes. Give it to me. I'm ready for that. I knew you were going to ask me this question. I'm ready for the question. Go.
Yeah. So, as you know, the unfortunate thing happened a few weeks ago. We were playing, you know, the Pittsburgh for the first time at home. Really highly anticipated game. Obviously, Brown season wasn't going according to plan. First game against Pittsburgh at home. Just a lot of things made the game huge. And the way the game went itself, in my opinion, was almost best case scenario. I mean, the only touchdown they scored was pretty much the refs gifting them with some penalties downfield. Besides that, it was complete domination. We scored 21 ourselves. And then, as you know, with about 8 seconds left in the game, the unfortunate thing happened with Miles and their douchebag quarterback and stuff like that. So I have my own thoughts on that whole situation. And I know you had a video on Facebook with OJ, and I'm definitely vibing with you on that one for sure. But what is your 2 cents on that whole situation? Because I think the big takeaway is it's unfortunate, right? Like, we lost our best defensive player for the season, and it made us kind of look bad and him look bad because he's not a bad person at all. But in the situation, I get infuriated when people try to act like, you know, he's this horrible person or, you know, Rudolph didn't do anything wrong, stuff like that. Just really gets me fired up. And so please give us your 2 cents on that situation.
For sure. So I think that Myles Garrett, you know, lost control, sure.
Mm-hmm.
I think he was absolutely provoked to that point multiple times, right? Rudolph kept coming back for it. Where the refs were in any of that, I don't know, because they didn't come in until the very end of it all, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that was an unfortunate part of it, too, is when the refs let it get to a point like that. Now, you know, I'm the type of person, so people are like, well, why was he even, you know, why was Myles Garrett even going that hard for him? It was the end of the game. There was only 8 seconds left. He can't even win gracefully. You know what? I'm not going for that because Rudolph wasn't kneeling on it, right? He was running a play. He was trying to do something. If we're out on the football field and we're running plays, we're playing football. So therefore, you are free game to get sacked. you know? And so I think it is absolutely unfortunate. And I have, I have sympathy for Myles Garrett. I do, because I feel like they are making an example out of him. Mm-hmm. There is absolutely a rule in the NFL rule book, which says if you take your helmet off and you use it as a weapon, it's a 15-yard penalty,
yeah.
Right?
An
injection from the game. But now they want to impose all these fines and ridiculous suspensions. And you know what? I'm not even all the way against him being suspended for the end of the year. I'm not. But the second you want to make it an indefinite suspension and he needs to come talk to the commissioner before possible reinstatement and blah, blah, yeah. blah, blah, blah. Like, at that point, for me, you're just taking it a little far. Yes, the damage could have been a lot more serious had he connected, with Rudolph's head harder or in a better, on the correct, people kept saying if he connected with the crown. Well, what was Rudolph going to do when he was attempting to rip Myles Garrett? If we want to play hypothetical, let's play all the way. So if he would have got Myles Garrett's helm off, what if he would have poked him in the eyeball, right? What if he would have, spit in his face? What if he would have punched him in the nose?
Yeah.
So if we're going to play what if, let's play what if both way. I don't disagree with the end, through the end of the year suspension. It sucks, but it's the nature of the beast when you lose control like that. Every action there's a reaction and repercussion for that, and that's what that was. Unfortunately, I think that Randolph or whatever the hell his name is should have gotten Rudolph. Yeah. Mr. Irrelevant should have gotten a little bit more of a penalty than he did.
Yeah, it's kind of easy to get into a longer discussion about this, which I don't want to take up the whole whole interview.
Sure,
talking about just this one subject, but it's really hard not to, right? Because since I am a hardcore fan, I genuinely care, right? Yeah. And this guy, he's our best defensive player. He's out for the season, so now we're in the situation where you pretty much have to win out to have a chance at the playoffs. And obviously not having him pressuring opposing quarterbacks is a big deal. So my take on it was, did it look horrible? Yes. Did it make him look bad? Yes. Did it make the Browns look bad? Yes. Was I ashamed of it as a Browns fan? Yeah. That's not what I support. You know what I mean? I don't support people doing ridiculous things, but this is a huge but. In that scenario, I think they should have given Myles 4 games. He would have came back for the last 2 games. Rudolph should have got suspended games because he's the one that provoked the whole thing. He didn't get anything. And then, they got Pouncey with 3 games down to 2 and Ogunjobi with 1. So what bothered me about it, Elizabeth, is what that showed me, and I'm kind of embarrassed to say this because, I've been watching football for decades, but I really, for the first time, I saw really the big business part of it, and that it's really all about exposure, right?
It is. It is, and unfortunately, it's so real for any business, right? You have to be very careful, and everybody's there to scrutinize you, and it's
The fact that the game was on Thursday, right? It's the only game on. A lot of people were seeing it. A lot of eyes were on it.
They were going to make a big deal out of that regardless. Like, it didn't matter if that was a thick of the Sunday games at 1 o'clock, I think it's still getting the attention that it does, for sure.
Yeah. Well, in the only time that's really happened in recent memory was with Incognito and I think it was Antoine Smith, and he took his helmet off and hit him with it. And it was in a preseason game. And I think they ended up suspending him for 3 games. And maybe only one of them were regular season games. And so when it's happened before, that was the punishment. So like you said, that's the punishment in the past. That wasn't any better or worse than what Myles did, but somehow Myles miraculously gets, not only the full season, but indefinitely.
They're going to make they're making an example out of him.
Yeah.
Right. They're going to make an example out of him. They're going to give him maximum. They're going to hang him out to dry because they don't want this to be a thing.
They don't want it to be a black eye.
Yep.
Yeah. I don't like that. I really don't. Like, it bothers me. That whole, culture of just, cover your own ass. You know what I mean? Nobody wants to look bad or it looks like they were sleeping on the job. Like, it's just treat everybody fairly. keep it consistent. Don't react with your emotions. Don't overpunish or underpunish. You know, just do your best job of keeping things fair. Yeah. And unfortunately, it's just not the world we live in. It's just everything's reactionary, and they're just trying to send a message because it was, you know, so much coverage on it and stuff like that. And so it's just, it's all about, you know, covering your own back. And so, yep. I don't know. I don't want to rant on that anymore, but thank you for talking about that. I know that you have a strong opinion about it, and so do I. Yep. I wanted to cover that. Speaking of that, this is a good segue. So I wanted to talk to you about defamation of character. You know, since you and OJ are two of the big wigs as far as making things happen in the WNFC, I'm sure you guys have seen your fair share of people trying to slander you or trying to slander the league or trying to make it, you know, worse than what it is, or, you know, just, you know, people are people, and unfortunately social media can be used in bad ways. What I wanted to ask you about was, I know people are going to be negative because negative sells, and I know that people are always going to have opinions. That's fine. But as it pertains to defamation of character, I had a situation with me that happened where there's this, like, player that went on social media and accused me of stuff, and it was things that I hadn't done, but she was putting it out there, right? It's almost like it doesn't even matter if it's true or not. If it's out there, then, you know, like, people don't know. Like, people don't know you. How would they know?
Guilty until proven innocent.
Yeah, for sure. So I'm interested in your perspective on that because I respect your opinion. You know, with defamation of character, it's one thing if you did something wrong, somebody's calling you out for it, and you got caught, right? But it's a whole different ballgame when people are saying things like negative about you that you didn't even do.
Yeah.
And so what would be your advice on that? Because I struggle with it. You know what I mean? I'm a man of principle, and, you know, it's hard for me to swallow. So what's your two cents?
Yeah. So, you know, it's taken me learning how and when to respond, and if you should even respond. And OJ has really, really, really helped me in that area. You know, I am a very emotional, very passionate, you know, very strong-willed person, and I, for one, am, you know, if somebody wants to say something, I'm ready to tell them to go, you know, fly a kite. Yeah, exactly. but it sucks, right? It sucks when people try to tear you down when you're only trying to do good things. And it's hard, but it's the reality. And, you know, I don't, if you follow me on Facebook, and you do, you see how much I share and quote and talk about LeBron James. Mm-hmm. And the reason I do that is because, you know, people are always tearing this man down, always, right? And why, what has he done that's deserving of them constantly tearing him down for things? And I know that this is a little bit different than defamation of character, right? You're talking like real, true accusations of wrongdoings and just blatant lies, right? And that's
same wavelength, though.
Yeah, it is. And you can only, like, in my mind, is if you're living your truth, that's all you can do, right? You can only continue to look forward and live your truth. The truth is what is always going to, you know, is always going to reveal itself. So if there's nothing to hide, if there's no truth in any of the nonsense that's being said, right, that's what's going to continue to shine, and that's you continue to push forward. But it just sucks that people don't have anything better to do than hate on other people and tear other people down. Like, use that energy that you have to go do good in this world. Stop being a pest over here, and you know what I mean? Like stop. Go do good somewhere.
Yeah.
Leave me alone.
Yeah.
And that's why, like, with LeBron, you can't even post that the man is the first guy in the NBA to score a triple-double on every team in the NBA without negative comments being said on that. How is that a negative? in what way could you make that a negative thing and make this guy a bad guy? If you go and read the comments, it happens. And it's just the world that we live in. People don't want to see other people succeed. They would rather both of you be stuck in the mud than one of you shining.
Misery loves company type of thing.
Gotcha.
Okay. Yeah, no, I feel you. So I guess my first question as far as nuggets of knowledge, and this is, sounds like it's via OJ, but how has she helped you, how has she helped you kind of with your filter, you know what I mean, or processing things and having discernment about how you should respond or if you should respond, how has that been, you know what I mean, like what is her filter?
Yeah, so the ability, and I have never seen this in anybody before, right? To literally ignore things and let things go. And these are things that are like serious things, right? Like serious accusations or serious threats even, you know? Mm-hmm. And she has the ability just to look forward and literally ignore, like she doesn't even see it. You know, so I have learned tremendously from her. She's helped me grow in that way. You know, that was absolutely an area of growth that I needed. You know, and that I can be candid or very open about that. I'm not ashamed of who I am or who I've ever been. But I can tell you that, you know, I would be one that if somebody wanted to pop off and say something, I'm going to pop off right back and say something. And she's helped me grow. She's helped me find that filter. She's helped me, you know, what did she say? Respond versus react. That's what she says. You know, respond versus react when everything usually triggers an emotional reaction from me. It's instead, process
breathe.
It. Breathe, process it, and respond. She's a special woman. I know a lot of people know that already. The world is learning and seeing more and more of that. But she is a special lady.
Yeah. Well, so are you.
Thank you.
I'll kiss your ass, but I hold you in high esteem as well. So
I appreciate that.
Yeah. So would you say, I guess, respond instead of react, was it more of like you observing OJ? Not sweat things like literally, or it was more of like her talking through stuff with you. You know what I mean? Like things happening to you and her being
both.
Like,
sure. Both. Yeah. Both. Yeah. Because you know, I, when I made the transition out here, I wish I could say that, you know, everybody back home supported my move from, you know, my teammates to the organization to everybody. But that's
for
not
the perfect
case.
World.
right, exactly. That's not the case. And you, you tend to lose people in your life that were there before, people that you thought were friends, really kind of to, you know, show that they aren't. Or maybe it's just you really truly realizing the type of people that you want in your life and that you're going to, you know, keep in your company. But, you know, she helped me through those things, you know, those times and those situations. And then I've done my fair share of watching her, you know, in how she handles things personally that come her way.
Yeah.
You know, and then we get things together, right? And I swear to God, if there's ever the day that OJ decides to react to something, I don't know what's gonna happen. Like, let me be the one that holds her back, you know, because that's not in her. It's not her character, you know. She talks about being elite, and being elite is way more than, you know, playing top level football, right? It's about how you carry yourself at all times, who you represent, and how you want to represent them.
Yeah, no, I feel you. I think I handle most things pretty well. Not that this is about me, but like I'm a pretty even keel guy. You know what I mean? I'll let myself get too high or too low, ever. Like I don't go there. So when things happen,
unless you talk about the Browns, the Browns, that tends to get you a little riled up.
A little bit. Yeah. But with that situation where had that like random player used to play for my team. Just make a like a random ass wild accusation. I think she was day drinking, and it was stuff that I hadn't done, but she had heard that I had done. Right, it's all rumor mill
mm-hmm,
stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And she put it out there for the public to see. So in that situation, the way that I handled it was I just, you know, deleted the post so nobody else could see the nonsense, and then I blocked her. You know what I mean? Blocked her on Instagram, blocked her on Facebook, and then just kept it moving. You know what I mean? Because, like you said, if the truth of the matter is that you're not guilty of those things, if that's the truth, what are you really worried about, right?
Like, right. Right.
You shouldn't be worried about somebody thinking something of you that's not true. Like, what can you do about that? Like,
and people are going to believe what they want to believe ultimately, right? Like, that is their choice. They make up their mind without anything from you.
Yeah.
You know, you can be told something, and the second you're told something, you instantly make up your mind one way or another, what you choose to believe, what you choose to not believe, or if you want to ask more questions to understand it better, to make, you know what I mean? But you have, you can't control how somebody's going to make that decision,
and
you know, so why waste energy on things that aren't in your control?
Exactly. Yeah. Which is easier said than done, but it's very wise.
Yep.
You know, to have a concerted effort about where you put your energy, you know what I mean, and only putting it in things you can actually have an effect on.
Yep.
Which is easier said than done. But.
Yeah, it is. And I'm another with a nudge of OJ from time to time when I get frustrated, when things get the better of me, you know. She often reminds me, you know, about letting things affect my happiness that I don't have control over. And I'm getting better. That's one of those things too that, you know, over the years I've really started to, you know, hey, if it's out of my control, it's out of my control, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. It's tough though. I mean, some things I feel like, you know, they're kind of easy lessons because once they click in your head, you got it, and you're just good from there. But other things, you know, especially if you've had a certain mentality or a certain way of thinking for a long-ass time, those are really hard to reset, right? Like, you just, it's like muscle memory. You just kind of naturally go there. And so, yeah, mindfully, you want to change. You know
absolutely.
What I mean?
Absolutely. Kind
of, in some cases, that has to be like a daily decision, you know, to be positive.
For sure.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
So another good segue. I appreciate it. It's funny. You don't know these questions, but you're setting me up. I was going to ask you about Cleveland Fusion possible fallout. So, like you said, you played for them for a long time.
Yep.
And then you were going to retire. And I think, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I think I heard a rumor that might be like the next coach for the Fusion. After you retired.
Yeah.
And then you obviously relocated to Texas and got married to OJ, and you guys were taking over the world in WNFC now. But how did that fallout all go? Because I don't mean to get too personal. You can tell me to fuck off if you want to. But I am curious, right? It's our hometown. I have love for most women's football teams. But I have, you know, love for the Fusion. I have love for you. But I also, I'm not naive enough to think that, you know, humans aren't going to be humans. And so how did that all go for you, if you don't mind?
Yeah, no, not at all. So they did. The Fusion did ask me to be the head coach, and it was shortly after my return from Queen USA, Vancouver.
Okay.
So, you know, I had accepted. Obviously, OJ and I had met in Vancouver, and something had started then. But, you know, a lot of things changed in Vancouver for me. Right. In a way, I found a different part of myself. I found a desire for more in my life in a lot of different ways. And, you know, I was still planning on being the coach. Right. I was actually learning from OJ. She was mentoring me. I was getting all kinds of, you know, tips and resources and best practices and practice got like everything you can imagine, right? Because she had ran a team before, and I had, you know, helped run the teams before, but had never, you know, obviously coached a team before. So it was going to be a big, huge step for me. But then as things progressed, and not only with OJ, but with my career, there were some pretty big opportunities out in the DFW area with Schwab. So I was starting to travel more, and I let, you know, the Fusion know that I was going to have to step away, you know, and not, because I could not give it all of me. And yeah. I've never once been the type of person that gets into something if I can't give it all of me.
Yeah, me too.
So I let them know, you know, that I was going to have to step away from head coach, but I still wanted to try to help the organization as much as possible. Mm-hmm. So on and so forth, you know, they were shocked, but also understanding. And then probably 6 months later, I made the move to Texas. So, you know, as far as bad blood, it's not there. You know, I think that I respect Tom and TJ, the owners and general manager of the Fusion. I obviously respect the women that I've played with for years, you know, that are still playing. And, you know, the Fusion fans, there's none like them. So that, you know, there's no bad blood. I think there was maybe some hurt feelings for a little bit, but I, you know, with time that has passed. And I think that there's a mutual respect and also admiration for what we're both doing respectively, right? For what the Fusion's trying to do in rebuilding the organization, and getting some more visibility in there. And, also with what we're doing with the WNFC.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, I was just curious how that all played out, because, you know, when you've been with them for that long, you know, and you kind of move on, and it sounds like, I obviously didn't know most of the story until today, but it sounded like not only, like, were things pointing that direction, like, with you and OJ, but also just life, right? Like, it sounds like all the stars were aligning for you to relocate to Texas, and so...
You know, it's crazy. The whole experience with Team USA was, when I say it changed my life, when you are a part of something like that, right? There were roughly 200 women that tried out for the 2017 national team. They selected a roster of 45, and the women that you meet are truly amazing, dynamic women in their own respective lives, right? In their own worlds, in their own careers, in their own paths. And there was just, you left there feeling so empowered, that there was so much more out there. And if you really, truly weren't living up to your full potential, it pushed you to go and find that, right? It opened your eyes to so much more, and that in itself, you know, obviously along with me meeting the most, I don't even, dynamic woman I've ever met in my life, you know, is that it all changed me, and I wanted more.
Gotcha. It's kind of like an awakening, or... Enlightenment.
You know, it was a tough move, only because of, you know, the situation with my son. You know, that if you know me, you know that he is my world. And I would literally do anything for that kid, and I had to make a really, really tough decision, and that was that, you know, for him, it was better for him to stay with his dad. Right. To stay with all of his dad's, you know, his dad's family lives close by. My family lives close by. He's been in the same school district his entire life. He's played sports with the same kids growing up his whole life. You know, his whole life was there. And it wasn't fair of me to take him from that. So it was an adjustment period for me. I had to learn how to be, an active and, engaged parent from, you know, 1,500 miles away.
Yeah.
And it was tough.
Yeah, it sounds tough. Was that like brutal at first, and then it took a while to get used to, or how long was that period of acclimation?
Yeah, it was pretty brutal at first. There were many, many nights that, you know, O had to spend you know, consoling me and telling me that it was going to be okay and that I wasn't the worst mom in the world because I left my son and that this is actually kind of normal, right? And that people mm-hmm. co-parent in this manner, you know, all over the world, and that, you know, I'm still giving everything to my son that I could possibly give, right? And caring for him and providing for him and nurturing him even being so far away. You know, we do a good job to see each other usually once a month. So I'm either there or he's here, so that's cool.
Yeah, sure.
You know, and we FaceTime usually at least 2 to 3 times a day. So even if it's just a quick 30 second, I want to see your face. That's what it is.
Yeah.
But it was tough, you know, what, you know, his sports, you know, he's in basketball and football, and not being there for those games was tough on me, you know, and it's still not easy, but it's just kind of a part of what we, you know, what I signed up for and what I committed to. And I find a way to be there for the big ones, you know, when I can be there, I find a way to make it count.
I gotcha. So my last question about that would be, how long would you say that change took as far as like that becoming the new norm? You know what I'm saying? Was it like a full year, or I'm just curious.
Yeah. You know, I'd say a full year. Okay. I think you have to get all the milestones, right?
Yeah.
You have to get through the holidays. You have to get through the birthdays. You have to get through the fact that, you know, he might not want to be here the whole summer break because he's a teenager now and he wants to spend some of that summer break at home with his kids or with his friends, you know? So there's all those milestones and adjustment periods and all the goodbyes. Like, the goodbyes sucked for a while. I really struggled then. How much I would be so elated when he was here, but when I put him on the flight to go back home, I was a train
wreck. Broke your heart.
Oh my God. Yes. Like, I would sob. You know, and then OJ would try to get me ice cream and take me shopping and retail therapy, anything he could do to get me to stop crying. But, you know, we've adjusted now. And hearing him at the wedding, Terry, he got up there and he gave this speech and he, you know, told everybody how amazing of a mom I am to him and how I'm his best friend. And that, I couldn't ask for anything more.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I feel you for sure. I mean, it's pretty obvious just being, you know, Facebook friends with you that you're a phenomenal mom. And,
Thank you. You
know, like you, I was raised by a pretty awesome mom too. And so I know how your son feels. But, you know, like relocating and stuff like that and you being so close to your son and wanting to be at everything because you always were, you know, that's obviously had to have been tough for a while. But, like you said, after the first year, you got past all the milestones and stuff like that. It's awesome that's, you know, you're able to kind of get there where you feel like it's going to be okay. You know what I mean?
Yep.
You know that he doesn't feel like he's abandoned or, you know, you guys aren't best friends anymore. There's just no hard feelings. So that's awesome.
Yeah. You know, it wasn't always the easiest to get through, but we got through it, you know, and he tested it too because, you know, he's a teenager too. He's a smart little shit, big shit, but... He, you know, the first, you know, quarter that I was here, he started slacking in one of his classes, and I, you know, I am adamant that, you know, he's an AB student, and that's what he brings home, and nothing less. And he tried to pull the whole like blame game on me, and he guilt tripped me, and he was like, "What?" Because I'm like, "What is going on? Like, why are we getting C's?" And he's like, "What's going on? You moved all the way to Texas, and you left me." And I'm like, "Whoa!" But like inside, like my heart shattered, my stomach dropped, I felt nauseous, you know, because I was like, but then I instantly had to remind myself, like, you cannot let him get away with this right now, or else he's going to continue to use that, right, the entire time.
Yeah,
absolutely. And I said to him, I said, "Oh, I left you? That's what I did? I left you? I don't talk to you every day? I don't, you know, I'm just MIA?" You know, so, but he tried.
Yeah, well, he's not a dumb kid, so
surprising.
So my next question for you would be, if you could rewind... And I know that we can't, but just hypothetically, if you could rewind to the beginning of your football career and do anything over differently, what would you do differently?
She didn't hang up.
You still there?
Yeah, I'm here. I'm thinking.
Okay.
That's a pretty deep question.
I know.
I think that I have taken every moment that I'm on the field very seriously. Like, if you know anything about me, when I'm on the field, it's like business, right? But I'm trying to think what I would do differently. I don't know that I would have changed anything. Yeah.
It's kind of like the butterfly effect, right? Like, if something else is done,
yeah,
the whole story might be different.
You're absolutely right. And I like my story. You know, I like my path in football. And I spent a lot of time in Cleveland. We talked about that. And it was a lot of hard fought years and games in tough divisions, where, you know, we would see the Chicagos and the Bostons and the DCs 2 to 3 times a year. But I wouldn't change any of that, you know, despite the fact it took me until coming out to Texas to get a championship ring. I still wouldn't have changed spending all those years where I spent them and who I spent playing with.
Yeah. Gotcha. Okay. Fair enough. This next question is kind of along the same lines, but maybe there's a different answer to it. What would you say to 25-year-old Elizabeth if you could talk to her?
You know what's crazy? That you just said 25. So when I was young, younger, let's say, you know, early teens,
yeah,
I always told myself that I would never live, not told myself, I always just knew that I would never live past the age of 25, right? I just lived so carefree, you know. I liked to party, so I would party. I did whatever I wanted. I would ride on the back of motorcycles when they would do stunts. You could get me on the fastest four-wheeler you got. I'd go crazy. Put me on a horse. I'm running Mach 10. You know, like, absolutely. So I always just thought, oh, I'm not going to make it past 25. But my life changed when I had my son. So that's why. So, but if I could go back at 25, it would probably be to take more videos of my son growing up. That's what I would tell myself. Take more videos of my son growing up, because he's about to turn 15 next week, and I don't know where the time went.
Yeah. Yeah, I've never been a big picture person, but, you know, when you do get older and time flies, pictures and videos are kind of all you have. You know what I mean?
Yep.
That's your memories, which can be shitty as you get older.
Yep.
So
yep.
I feel you on that. So my next question is about the WNFC. The only question I wasn't sure, because, you know, like, when I post this interview, I want to put, like, you know, not only your name and your former name, but also, like, your current titles. And so I know you have a pretty big title with WNFC, and you do a lot of things behind the scenes. But what is your title as of right now with this season?
It's with the WNFC?
Yeah. Yep.
It's the COO, so the Chief Operating Officer.
Gotcha. Okay, that's what OJ was, right?
Correct, yeah. When she moved into CEO, I moved into COO.
Got it. Perfect. Okay. So my question about the WNFC is, obviously, you know, starting a new league, the WNFC, is a huge endeavor. And if anybody could pull it off, it's OJ. You know, just because, like you said, she's such a dynamic person.
Yep.
And she knows a lot of, you know, of the right people to get stuff done. And she's kind of just a GSD person, you know, in general. So are you.
Mm-hmm.
So she surrounded herself with an awesome group of people that can really make shit happen. And so I'm not surprised that it actually did happen. But since you were a part of that process literally from the beginning, and I was fortunate enough to be kind of there in the infancy stages, you know, I went to the Best of the West tournament, you know, with those four teams, and then congratulated OJ after the game. And she's like, hey, I'm gonna be having this meeting in Plano about, I don't even know, even sure she said the new league, but I have this important meeting in Plano, and I think I'm going to invite you. So look out for that. And so then she invited me to the meeting, and she had talked to me on the computer before that and told me a little bit about the new league and the ideas she had and what they were planning. And I was already like sold. I was like, oh man, it's going to be awesome. Then I went to the meeting and I was just blown away. It was better than what I even thought. Like I was already stoked. Like,
yeah.
Mind blown. Yeah. Then I go to the meeting and she gives even more clarity. And I was like, holy shit. Like this is groundbreaking stuff.
Yeah.
And so first of all, kudos to you, OJ, and everybody else involved. Because Grant, you know, I'm involved with the league, and so I'll probably sound biased, but I'm really not biased. Like, if you guys, you know, if it was a shitty league and you guys were running things wrong, I just wouldn't talk about it. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
Like, I'm a real dude. But what you guys have created is really, you know, refreshing for me. I've only been involved in sport for about 6 or 7 years. But what I tell people, they're involved in other, you know, minor leagues, as far as football goes, is what I've seen in the WNFC in this first year is things I've never seen in any other league before, as far as transparency goes, as far as, you know, big picture visions, stuff like
yeah.
that. Yeah. And so the whole thing is just awesome, and you're already aware of that. So, but my question for you is, it's a huge endeavor. A lot of things had to happen for it to work. You guys did a great job the first year, and it's only going to get better. My question is, what things, like, in your first year of the WNFC kind of caught you off guard, or did you not expect as far as, you know, how you thought everything would go and how it actually went?
I think what I needed to get comfortable with that I wasn't acclimated to or
yeah.
wasn't familiar with was the fact that, yes, it's a startup, so there's a plan,
mm-hmm.
but there's really no blueprint, right? Like, you...
Never been done before.
right. Yeah. So many... When I would get so caught up in what we haven't done yet
mm-hmm.
and stop and celebrate all the things that we are doing.
Yeah.
You know, like, and wanting more and wanting it now. Like, I'm an extremely impatient person by nature, that I had to really, really, you know, pull the reins back and just, you know, stop and look at what we're doing and the things that we're doing on a daily basis, you know, and, you know, a lot of the women that we have on the team, the WNFC staff, are damn near working full-time jobs outside of their full-time jobs, and they're doing it for free,
yeah.
right? Nobody's getting paid a dime to do this. So you have to already know that what you're doing means something, right? It's important.
For
what
sure.
we're doing is important. And all of the people have bought into that, and they all believe it, and they all see it, and we're all working towards the same goal. So, you know, as far as what surprised me, you know, or what caught me off guard, I don't know that anything necessarily caught me off guard, at least that I can think of off the top of my head.
Mm-hmm.
But there's just a lot of little things that we continue to learn from, you know,
mm-hmm.
there's things that we didn't implement last year when, okay, yeah, we looked at uniforms. We said, okay, great. Yeah. Everybody's got to get uniforms. Yeah. We're going to look at them at a league before you turn them in. You know, and we didn't implement, hey guys, everybody needs a light and dark, and your dark one can't have dark numbers. It has to have light numbers or you can't see it, right? So little tiny things like that, that now this year we have a uniform policy, right, where we didn't last year. And then this year there is a uniform policy and there's standards. And so we're constantly evolving. We're constantly learning from our mistakes and continuing to build this thing. And it's exciting and it's frustrating. And 3 days ago, I was in tears in the morning because I was just literally like, why are we doing this? You know, and you have those moments. And you just need to get it out and breathe and then and settle down a little bit, and it'll come to you why. You know, it comes back why we're doing this. It's special. What we have is very special.
Agreed.
And where we're going is even more special.
Yeah, definitely agreed. So, yeah, I mean, that's kind of with anything, right? Like, if you're doing anything new, especially if you're running a business, like in the first year of it or in its infancy, you're going to do some things wrong. Like, nobody's going to, like, you know, do everything perfect their first time out. And so as you do things, I wouldn't even say wrong, you know, you can do them better. You just kind of take notes as you're going and just do better the next year. So every year is just better than the last year. It's kind of the same philosophy I have for coaching. You know what I mean? Like with my coaching background, with the teams that I've coached, the goal was always just to be better than you were. So whether it be better at the next practice, better at the next game, or ultimately better the next season, I just never want to take a step backwards. You know what I mean? I don't want to go 4-2, then 2-4. I don't want to make it to the game before the championship and then not make the playoffs. You know what I'm saying? But there's just, you should always be striving to go forward. And so, yeah, I mean, I just have, I don't mean to make you blush, but I have a lot of, you know, admiration and respect for you and OJ, a lot of people in the league that are making things happen. But the thing that blows my mind, this is the last thing that I'll touch on before I let you go, is the, like, when I say that WNSC is refreshing, it's funny, Elizabeth, because it's almost like you don't know what you were missing because you never had it.
Yeah.
That makes sense, right?
Yeah.
So, like, when I was involved with other minor leagues or semi-pro leagues, whatever you want to call them, and there was, you know, the standard that was, it was what it was, right? So whether it be them paying X amount of dollars per team or the league never being transparent about anything, you know, whatever it is. There's mm-hmm. different leagues and everybody does things differently. But there was a consistency in that none of them were transparent, right?
Yeah.
And so it's kind of, I kind of always felt like it was a little bit of a Wizard of Oz thing, you know, like don't look beyond the curtain. And so, unfortunately, I kind of just accepted that as truth. I'm like, well, this is just how semi-pro or minor leagues is, that's how it is. And so when the WNFC, you know, was created and there was this new standard, right, and there's this big picture mentality about where they want the sport to go and how we're going to get there, and there's actually a business plan in place. And for me, I think this appeals to me just because I'm a real person in general. Like, I'm real. I appreciate realness with me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just, mm-hmm. I gravitate towards realness. And so when people are real or / transparent, that really resonates with me because I don't want to, like, have to guess what your intentions are, right?
Right.
I don't want you to, like, announce that, you know, you're sponsored by this company for championship weekend, but then I can't find the details anywhere, right? So I'm just left to guess what the hell your sponsorship means. Does it mean that somebody's getting a $20 Applebee's gift card? Does it mean that people are getting free jerseys? Does it mean that they're getting 10 grand? Like, there's just this huge gamut of things that you can just slap sponsorship on the freaking social media page, and it's just too vague, right?
Yeah.
Like, what the hell are you, what is it you're talking about? So, yeah, the transparency has been huge for me. As a fan of women's football and as a coach on a you know, WNFC team. And so kudos to you guys for that.
It's
not common. It should be common, but it's not. I've never seen it before. And like I said, I'm stoked for the future. I'm stoked for year two of the WNFC and all the upcoming years. I don't know where I'm going to be, but I know that I'm not going anywhere as a women's football fan. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm definitely not, you know, like Burmy. Like, I think me and him are on different pages as far as, like, how, you know, how much time we're putting into the sport and how we cover the sport and stuff like that. But,
you know, it takes people being, you know, invested in the sport and also supporting it. So, you know, all of the podcasts out there, if people are talking about women's football, you know, that's the start, right?
Yeah.
And that's absolutely it, because we need to continue to get it out there. We need to continue to talk about it. We need to continue to promote ourselves and you know, those things, they all matter. So kudos to you with everything that you're doing. You know, I'm a fan, and I hope things go in the direction that you want them to go with, you know, hell, whatever direction you're going with this, you know. But I think that, you know, you've got a good knack for it, and good luck to you in your run.
Absolutely. Yeah, I appreciate that. So in closing, I ask all my guests as a parting gift to basically, you know, like, if you want to plug something, you can plug your ass off. So whether it be, you know, something professionally or just with WNFC or a website or social media, whatever you want to do, have at it, because my platform's yours.
Yeah, so I think just stay tuned. Stay tuned to what the WNFC is doing. Big 2020 news is coming soon, and we are, you know, we're continuing to raise the game, and I just want everybody to, you know, to get on board with what we're doing. Right, we have our crowdfunder out there, you know, so if you're interested in advancing women's football, ifundwomen.com. We launched our first crowdfunding, and, you know, every dollar helps, every dollar counts. So, you know, all the $5 donations, they add up just as much as the big significant $1,000 or $5,000 donation. So, you know, ifundwomen.com, there it is. And check us out, WNFCfootball.com, and follow along for the 2020 season.
Perfect. Well, as usual, always great to talk to you.
You too.
Appreciate your time. You're a busy woman, and I'll be releasing the podcast on Friday nights, so I'll make sure I tag you, and yeah, we'll get the word out there. But
awesome.
Yeah, it was great talking to you, and I'll talk to you soon, okay?
Thanks, Terry.
All right, see ya.
Bye.
And there you have it. That was Elizabeth Jenkins, formerly Elizabeth Dillo. As you can see, awesome woman. Awesome business person, awesome football player, just an awesome human being. And so awesome to talk to her and get to know her better. Hopefully you guys enjoyed that as much as I did. Two things during the when I was listening to the interview that caught my attention was I made a joke when I was listening with you guys. When I asked her that one question and there was like a deep pause, I literally thought like that I lost connection and she hung up. But she was just thinking, so... that's all good. And then I said something about Bermi. So Bermi is a guy who covers women's football, pretty hardcore on social media, like Facebook and stuff like that. And, I think Bermi's an awesome guy. I think Bermi has good intentions for the sport. But the amount, what I was alluding to when I talked to Elizabeth was the amount of time that he puts into things is something that I can't offer, right? So whether it be him doing write-ups about current teams or current games or, you know, making fan art for certain teams and upcoming matchups, all that stuff is super cool. And I especially enjoyed it when I used to be covered by him. But those are just things that I don't have the time for, or the knowledge to do. And so we just do different things, right? Like I talked to Louise Bean in Vegas. She plays for the Utah Falcons, and she's a part of a podcast as well with this guy, Oscar. And she kind of asked me why I was doing a podcast, and I want to say she asked me kind of like, why am I doing a podcast when there's already other podcasts about women's football? And my response to her was, I don't think what my podcast is is like being done by anybody else. And that's not in like an egotistical way. I think it's just a factual thing. Like, as far as I know, there's Oscar's podcast where he talks about women's football in general. He covers other types of women's football. And well, I'm not going to get into that. But yeah, he covers a lot more than just American women's football like I do in the two big leagues. And he has multiple hosts. You know, it's like him and some other people. And so there's different people on the mic. And he'll interview people. He'll bring people on for interviews. But those are like typical interviews, right? They're like, you know, quick little sound bites where they ask him some questions, kind of a round table of different people asking questions. And then they're off in a pretty, you know, quick fashion. My podcast, in my opinion, is much different because it's, you know, I have the solo part in the beginning. And then when I have my guest on, it's not meant to be quick. It's not meant to be, you know, just a few questions. And it's honestly, there's not much, like, I don't have many rules for it. Like, you know, of course, I want it to be around an hour because I want the podcast to be about an hour and a half total just for consistency. But aside from me aiming for about an hour, I really don't care. I don't care if it's less time than that or more time than that. I don't care where our discussion goes. You know, if we get off topic, there is no off topic. You know, it's just two people having a conversation. And so I don't think that that was happening in women's football as far as from a podcast standpoint. And that's something that I enjoy. Like, you know, I'm a huge fan of Joe Rogan's podcast, and I enjoy, you know, those long, what do they call that? When it's a discussion that's like lengthy, long verse, I don't know. Doesn't matter. But yeah, what I'm saying is Joe Rogan has his guests on and they talk for hours. They might talk for an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours. This depends on the guest, but there is no limit. There's no wrong answer. They just talk until they're done talking and then that's it. And so I enjoy that. I'm a huge fan of his podcast. And so the beauty about having a podcast is you can do whatever the hell you want to do. You can, you know, talk for 10 minutes about butterflies, or you can go on a rant about, you know, grammar. It's your world. There's no wrong answer. And the only way it is a wrong answer is if nobody's listening or nobody likes your podcast. For what I've heard so far, there are some people that like my podcast, and so I'm not going to change too much. But to that point, in closing, I do have some ideas for 2020 to improve the podcast. Like I said, once football ends, I'm going to have to switch some stuff up to do some different things to fill in some time. Because I don't want to shorten the podcast dramatically, you know what I mean? And so I'm going to try to keep it kind of similar, but I also don't want to stretch it out just to stretch it out. So I'll figure it out. But yeah, as usual, thanks for joining me, guys. It's always great to talk to you. And feel free to give me any feedback if you guys have any positive or negative feedback. But I will talk to you guys next week. And yeah, next week. And then that'll be the last week before Christmas. I think I'll have to take 1 week off for Christmas. But yeah, thanks for joining me. Have a good weekend. Talk to you soon.